school, right? I'm going to a job interview. And the pleasant, well-dressed man across from me smiles, beckons me to please sit down. I smile back. I've been through this process a million times. He pulls up my transcripts, he looks. Then on cue, the puzzled expression, the slight tilting of the head, the inhaling of breath. And I know what he's seeing. No, my grades aren't horrible exactly. No, he begins where they all begin. Mr. Washington, it says here you studied imaginary worlds of fantasy literature in law school? Well, I can explain that in ancient Chinese calligraphy, animal music theory, as part of a law curriculum? Right, well, so here's what happened. If one was to look back at the fine print of law school admittance, which you're supposed to do as a lawyer, if you examine the fine print, it says you can take a certain amount of high-level courses from any discipline. So 2 semesters in, I figure, I've had all the law I can stand. Surely I'll be a better lawyer if I can bring something else to the table. This is all very interesting. And you're telling me butterflies sing? And what do you have against Tolkien anyway? We have a spirited, enjoyable discussion. Then he glances at his watch. Mr. Washington, it's been truly wonderful getting to meet you. He smiles. I smile. So, do I get the job? We both laugh. Today, Snap Judgment proudly presents Stuff and Nonsense. My name is Glenn Washington. Study singing butterflies if you want to. Just make sure it's not on your transcript. When you're listening, to Snap Judgment. Now then, we're going to tune your radio to a very special station. You can't hear this station in your car. You can't play it on your phone because it only exists in one man's imagination. Jeff Mache has a story.
Hi, this is Dick Duncan right here on Radio 77. My real name is, of course, Eric Duncan Thorpe. But you're listening to me right now on the air, in the air chair, as Dick Duncan. Did you get that? While I'm recording this for you, I have turned off some of the processing on the mic. I normally have 139-second delay on the mic, which fills out the sound of the voice. Did you want me to put that on? Yeah. Okay, it will just take me a second. It's on now. Dick Duncan right here in the air chair. A mountain of music guaranteed. How did that sound?
Dick Duncan nicknamed himself after a character in an Elvis movie. He grew up obsessed with rock records. Then in 1965, when he was 20 years old, Dick heard a brand new sound.
Okay, here we go. 3 hours of the best music you ever heard.
C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E. Caroline, Caroline, Caroline.
The first time I heard Radio Caroline,
3 hours of great music,
I was driving in my car along the coastal highway in North Wales. And a friend who was with me, he said, there's a pirate radio station anchored somewhere around here. Why don't we tune in and have a listen to it?
It's Sunday on Radio Caroline International. And for the next 3 hours,
we found the station and I thought, wow, this is just incredible.
Yes, indeed, Daddy. Oh, that's me. One and the same.
Radio Caroline was called a pirate radio station because it broadcast from a ship in international waters, playing wall-to-wall hits. And at that moment, something turned on in Deke that he would never be able to turn off.
They were so cool and they were very smooth and the delivery was just so professional and very, very slick. A disc jockey would talk over the introduction right up to the vocal line.
Fontella Bass on Caroline International, and this is Rescue Me. Rescue me,
or take me in your... This is sonic artwork. Compared to the BBC, this is a revolution.
Deke's talking about the British Broadcasting Corporation, run by the government.
This is the BBC Home Service.
In England, we sometimes call it Auntie Beeb.
Auntie Beeb, yeah. My aunt, you know, A-U-N-T.
Back then, Auntie Beeb only played about 6 hours of pop music every week. The rest of the time, it was pretty dull.
Sing something simple.
That was the music that your parents liked. It's an establishment figure, a little like the teachers were when I was at school. Now, you behave yourself. Now, this is a bit brash. Don't enjoy yourself. Stop that. It's too much fun.
For the next half hour, why not sing something simple along with the Adams...
Deke called the BBC to apply for a job. He spoke to a receptionist.
I said, I'd like to be a DJ on radio. Could I send you an air check and you could review it and maybe let me know? She asked me how old I was. And then, this is unbelievable, she said, this is a very, very precarious way to earn a living. A young man like you, I suggest you go away and get yourself a real job. I was speechless.
Then he had an idea. What if he could have his own radio station? He could choose the songs. He could DJ all night if he wanted. And it wouldn't be illegal if he didn't actually broadcast on the airwaves. He borrowed a tape recorder from his brother and bought a job lot of second-hand radio jingles from a catalogue.
Amazing jingles from WABC 77. Just edited out the WABC and I was left with the 77. That sounds like a good name. My station can be Radio 77.
Alone in his bedroom, Deke transformed himself into a pirate DJ, worthy of Radio Caroline.
I would just pretend that I was on the air, play the records and the time checks, give the weather reports, and I would analyse it. I would think, does this sound like a radio? Eventually, I got it right, and it did sound like a radio.
In 1967, the British government shut down Radio Caroline. The ship was towed away. They also made it illegal for British citizens to work on pirate radio stations. That didn't stop Deke.
I saw the ad in the musical press for disc jockeys required, must be prepared to work at sea. That was from Radio North Sea.
Radio North Sea was a pirate station on the ship Mebo 2, anchored off the coast of Holland.
I applied for, sent them an air check. They actually said, yeah, you can come and work for us. They recognised that I was okay. Not like the woman from the BBC who said, get yourself a real job. I quit my job. I said goodbye to all my friends. This is it. I would board the tender and then make the 18-hour trip across the North Sea to where the ship was anchored. Actually, I was even looking forward to being seasick. I was so excited. How nice that would be to be isolated like that on that ship and have nothing to do but do your radio show. It would have been a dream come true.
But days before he was set to board, Deke's dream was blown to pieces.
This is the radio ship Mebo 2. Mebo 2? SOS, SOS.
Don't be fooled by the jaunty music. This is a real Mayday call sent from Radio North Sea on May the 15th, 1971.
We have an emergency on board, a fire in the engine room. This is caused by a bomb thrown on board from a motorboat.
You heard that right. a bomb.
We may have to abandon ship. We carry enough fuel on this ship to blow the half the North Sea into the sky.
The ship was bombed by a rival Dutch station who kind of didn't like these upstarts coming along and taking their listeners. The ship did survive and the station survived, but they were gone off the air for a long time. I thought I could have been on that ship. So maybe my life was saved there.
It is not over. If you think a bomb is about to stop Deke from DJing, you better think again. When the Stuff and Nonsense episode continues, Snappers, stay tuned. Judgment, the Stuff and Nonsense episode. My name is Glenn Washington, and last we left, Deke had just lost his dream pirate radio gig after the ship/radio station was blown up. Jeff Mache fills us in on what happens next.
Deke had no other choice but to go back to his job in construction.
Carry on. I still have my imagination, so carry on. We'll take it from there.
Deke lived in Stevenage, a suburb north of London, with rows of identical homes, manicured lawns, and a shiny motor car in each driveway.
Here, then, is the design for living of the future, a town planned down to the last nail.
On the weekends, he DJed at a local club under the name Deke Dino.
Maybe they might think I'm Italian or something. I would do the show in the style of a radio DJ rather than a club DJ where you would stand up and dance and do silly things. So I thought, no, I'll sit there with headphones. I'll present the whole show with jingles, radio jingles. And it went down very well. People loved it.
He really looked the part.
Velvet pants with the bell bottoms, Cuban heel shoes, sometimes a frilly shirt, kipper ties, a mass of hair, sometimes permed, a drooping moustache. I would strut round thinking, am I cool or what? And I don't think it was what.
On Saturday night, the club was packed with girls, like Teresa, who loved to let down her hair after a long week of work.
I worked in a factory, sewing machining, making shirts, and we had music on all day.
She was a friend of one of the go-go dancers.
Teresa shared Deke's love of pirate radio.
Before that, we only had like an hour a week of pop music on the radio. There was none, nothing else. And when they came out, it was fantastic.
She was a very happy-go-lucky girl and bouncy, bubbly.
We was only going out together for about 3 months before we got married.
Deke continued to record his radio show on his own, just for himself, not broadcasting to anyone. But then he told a few friends at the club.
I'm one of these people that just love anything in the top 40, really. I love old records, but I'm a top 40 man. I just listen to top 40 all day.
This is Rick.
My DJ name back in those days was Richard St. John.
Rick and another one of his friends, Clive, decided to help Deke build a radio studio at home.
The station would have been in a bedroom before then, and we thought, it doesn't feel right, a radio station in a bedroom. We thought, well, why don't we build a shed in the garden? And it would feel like you were on a ship.
To his neighbours, it just looked like an ordinary garden shed with a pointed roof.
But it wasn't like that. That little building housed a very professional-sounding radio station.
Deke's radio dreams were becoming something close to reality. 77.
Favorite sounds from 1974, Maria Muldaur.
Midnight at the Oasis.
The guys would turn up on a Friday evening. We'd stock up with food, and we would do 3-hour shows, rolling shows, right through. the whole weekend.
6 o'clock, Clive Christa here in the air chair, manipulating the mountain of music.
Absolutely lovely.
Good morning to you. My name's Richard St. John here on 77. I'm taking
our dream was to be like that pirate radio. That's what we were doing. We were actually being that.
10 minutes past 7 o'clock, without further ado for you, and the skies are blue, more music. 60 degrees expected on the outside today.
They made up the weather.
Not too warm, but it's not too cold.
And they made up the news.
Vandalisms of supermarket trolleys has prompted Stevenage Development Corporation to introduce trolley parks in the downtown car parks.
They made up the adverts.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Yeah, but Colt 45 tastes better.
But of course, none of this was broadcast to anyone.
We was done it as if there were listeners, but we knew obviously there wasn't.
Thanks for tuning our way, and if you're listening in your car right now, thanks for the ride.
Nobody's going to give you a licence for that kind of radio. In the UK, it didn't happen. You couldn't do it. That's why nobody had set up a radio station in England like that.
Hey, we're going to love again. Back on year to 1971.
The only output was a speaker in Deke's living room, so Teresa could listen.
That was always in the background. When he got in from work, he'd have his dinner and go out there until 12 o'clock at night, every night.
It was just so much fun. I just wanted to do it forever.
But eventually, Auntie Beebe caught wind of what they were doing. Word had spread around town.
We were kind of local celebrities there, really. These weird guys that have this radio station in a house.
A film crew from the BBC's Nationwide show, that's the British equivalent of 60 Minutes, came to film a typical day in the life of Radio 77.
Mrs. Duncan of Gonville Crescent, Stevenage, is doing her housework to the music of her favourite radio station. Right now, she's tuned into her favourite DJ.
Here to try and put a grin around your chin. A special hello, how are you, going out right now to Mrs. Teresa Duncan, 57 Gonville Crescent at Stevenage. How in the world are you feeling, my darling? It's 9:40 on 77. These are the OJs.
Teresa, wearing a very 1970s dress, is filmed leaving the house.
I'm going to the shops, right, Deke?
Radio 77's ratings could be in for a bad morning now that the station's entire audience has decided to go down the shops.
The TV people made up this story that we had done this purely to play for my wife. They thought that was a good angle.
Well, the interest in radio came from the pirates.
That wasn't actually the case. The case was we wanted to be radio DJs and we wanted this radio station there to be authentic.
My ultimate ambition would be to broadcasters to the rest of Stevenage. I'd like to share it with them.
But the appearance on Nationwide was not Radio 77's big break.
I don't think anybody was interested in it, to be honest. Nothing ever came of that at all at that time.
Radio 77 had fizzled out in the early to mid-80s. I was quite sad. Actually, I was very sad.
Deke worked long hours at his construction job. He and Teresa had 3 children. Life moved on. But there was a jaunty little jingle in his head that he just couldn't ignore.
I thought, there's nothing here in England for me as a radio jock. I'll just go to the fatherland.
He decided to take one more shot at becoming a disc jockey in America.
The land of the free, where music radio is abundant. We sold our house and the up sticks and off we went.
He had friends in San Diego, so that's where they went. Deke knocked on the door of every radio station he could find.
2 stations said that we'll take you on the graveyard shift, which was, well, you know, that's from midnight till 6 a.m., which I would have loved that. But the pay was just so bad.
The lady from the BBC had been right. Making radio is no way to earn a living.
I just went back home with my tail between my legs. You yourself imagine coming back from San Diego and landing in London in November. Everything seems so grey and dark. Yeah, it was a big come down.
Really, when we went to America, it was for what he wanted to do and it didn't work out. And then, you know, we came back and it was just terrible, to be honest.
Teresa had had enough.
He's done what he wants. his dream, whatever he's wanted to do for his life.
All that time Deke had been making Radio 77, she'd felt abandoned.
I was, yeah. Basically, we never spent any time together at all.
I would cut off all the outside world, and my whole world would be on the radio. It's really weird that it's only now that I'm an old man, that I realise how selfish I was.
After the divorce, Deke was alone, and all he had left were a handful of recordings from Radio 77.
Maybe a dozen on old-fashioned cassettes in my car. I must have left the car open one night and somebody opened the door and helped themselves and took them. I wish maybe one day I could find out who that was and buy them back.
It was like the thieves had stolen the best years of his life. Now Radio 77 was truly, finally gone, just like his family. Deke packed away his records and hung up his headphones. And how old are you now, Deke?
It's 75 in June.
And how old do you feel?
I feel 12 and three quarters.
The woman Deke is laughing with in the background is his new wife, Pamela.
She's here now, yeah. Would you want her to take the air chair? Right.
Hi.
Deke and Pamela have known each other since they were teenagers. Back in the 70s, he even came to her house and taught her how to DJ.
The one phrase I remember is, what he taught me was, a very good evening to you one and all. This is yours truly, Pamela, stirring up a ball with a wailing pound of sound right here in the pretty city, good sound of the nitty-gritty.
They reconnected after Deke's marriage ended, and as hers was falling apart. All that remained of Radio 77 was a one-hour-long tape the thieves hadn't managed to grab.
I would dream about Radio 77. I would constantly have dreams. Very pleasant dreams about constructing the studio and going back into it, talking into the mic and editing the jingles. And I would tell Pamela, I would say, I've dreamt about Radio 77 again.
I thought, you know, if somebody steals it that much that they dream about it, then they should do it.
One day she said, well, why don't we just go and get some broadcast equipment and do the whole thing again? Why not? I'll do it in the garage. I had plans to build a soundproof room in the garage, but then one day I had this pain in my chest. I ended up on the floor, and Pamela, quickly and very level-headedly, she called 999. Actually, believe this, she called 911 first. She watches too much CSI. I was in the hospital within 10 minutes, on the theatre table.
They said to him if they hadn't succeeded in the 3 hours that he would have died.
I had a near-fatal heart attack. It did all kinds of things to me, put stents in my arteries, and my life was saved. And I felt like a new man.
As soon as Deke recovered, he built the studio in the garage in his backyard.
This studio here feels very much like the studios on those pirate ships all those years ago. Very intimate. If you closed the curtains at the window, you could think that you were in a ship. It's rather cool.
Radio 77 was back.
This'll get you moving. All right. That's so cool. Tanya Tucker.
This time, Deke set up two speakers for his wife, and Pamela listened every day.
You know, and he thought maybe I could read the news, which he schooled me in.
You don't read the news, you deliver it.
77 News with Pamela Duncan.
First, factual. Prime Minister Boris the Animal has announced his intention to remove all speed bumps from Britain's road system. Mr. Johnson says these devices do nothing more than damage our cars and strain our tempers.
Deke and Pamela were happy to keep Radio 77 to themselves. But that's not what happened. Instead, an almost magical sequence of events connected the Radio 77 shed with the BBC mothership.
Radio 77's ratings could be in for a bad...
After 45 years, the BBC put their video of young Deke Duncan in the 70s on Facebook.
Well,
Well, the interest in radio came from the Pirates, Radio Caroline.
A local DJ noticed the footage.
My name's Justin Dealey. I work for BBC Three Counties Radio in England. Here we had a man in a shed broadcasting to one person and not getting paid a single penny for doing so. And we had to find...
Justin then launched a massive manhunt.
I saw a message with an email address that it was bbc.co.uk. So I thought, oh, that's a real guy. That's not just some weirdo.
We found him. Here he is. Deke Duncan.
Deke, welcome. Justin invited Deke to be a guest on his show.
A bit older, but...
They replayed the old documentary.
My ultimate ambition would be to broadcast this to the rest of Stevenage. I'd like to share it with them.
Then the station manager came on air with a bombshell.
I want to offer you a one-hour special over Christmas on Three Counties Radio.
The BBC offered Deke his own show, giving him an hour during prime time on New Year's Eve.
That feels really nice. I'm absolutely, first time in my life, I'm speechless.
Though you can't hear it, he's clearly shaken and turns pale.
You better pass the tissues.
Deke recorded the show at home, in his studio. In the end, millions tuned in. Millions of real listeners. And now, without further ado, here it is.
Good evening. Welcome to the big, wide, wonderful world of Uncle Deke Duncan. I'm in the air chair for the next 60 minutes. My aim is to put a little grin on your chin, a smile across your radio dial.
Deke had been through it all. Marriage, divorce, a narrow escape from a maritime bombing.
It's made my life. I've broadcast Radio 77 via the BBC's transmitter. There were no producers and nobody waving a finger at me and saying, you must do this, must do that, mustn't say this, mustn't say that. Just go ahead and do it with the freedom that the Radio Caroline DJs had.
Step inside here, fellow. What have you got to say to me? I knew the bride when she used to rock and roll. Oh, you did? I knew the bride when she used to rock okay. and roll. Tell us more. This is going to be interesting.
The dedication for Pamela was her favourite song, Maggie May, and I played my favourite album track, If I'm Sleeping. If I'm sleeping, don't wake me up. And the line is, if I'm sleeping, don't wake me up. But my interpretation of that is, if I'm dreaming, don't wake me up, which sums up my life. My whole life has been a dream, really. Whole life been in my imagination.
Sitting in his cosy studio in his backyard, Deke had finally become a professional DJ. It took him his entire life to do it.
I would say sometimes living the dream can be more enjoyable than realizing the dream. Live the dream, dude.
This is the lovely sound of Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. Uncle Deke in the air chair. A mountain of music guaranteed. Yes, indeed. You don't have to be a star. Sing it to me now. Baby, come as you are with just your
Thank you for tuning into Radio 77. That story was recorded entirely at home by Jeff Mache.
Deke, do you have any advice for the rest of us who are stuck at home with this coronavirus thing?
And Deke Duncan.
Yeah, become a radio disc jockey. You notice they don't call disc jockeys anymore. I hate that.
The original score for that story was by Renzo Gorio. The story was co-produced in partnership with Narratively and its founder, Noah Rosenberg. Reporting came from Jeff Mache. It was produced by Jeff Mache and John Facile. When Snap Judgment returns, a young boy gets a surprise gift from his father. But the present comes with certain expectations. Stay tuned. Snap Judgment's orbiting Hall of Justice. Welcome to Snap the Stuff and Nonsense episode. My name is Glenn Washington. Now, some children and their parents, they have a more complicated relationship than others. Snap's Anna Sussman spoke with Jaime Cortez concerning a story he wrote about himself, his father, and a fancy pair of boxing gloves. Snap Judgment.
Tell me where the story takes place.
It's all happening on a migrant farm worker camp. It was pretty common for large ranchers to provide kind of basic housing for seasonal farm laborers. And so these were labor camps.
And this is where you grew up?
And that's where I grew up, yeah, in San Juan Bautista in a labor camp there. That was my earliest.
What was the housing like?
It did not have indoor plumbing, like in terms of bathrooms, so we had outhouses. And they tended to be small. They were either one bedroom or two bedroom for a small family. And they were all kind of clustered together, surrounded by fields that were where usually it would be tomato or lettuce growing.
And yeah. As a kid, did you and your sister do the farm work?
Yes. At that time, it was also really common for children to be out working, especially during harvest. You know, by the time we were 10, we had worked harvesting a bunch of different kinds of crops, including potatoes and apples and pears and garlic and onions and cucumbers.
Your dad's in the story you're going to tell. Tell me about your dad.
My dad was like an incredibly hardworking man. His work ethic was tremendous. He was also a hard man. He definitely had some very set ideas about what a man should be like.
And tell me about the story you're going to tell us today.
This is a story called El Gordo. And it's very much, I think, the story of, you know, as I wrote the story, I really started thinking about how in some ways, you know, a child can land in the life of a parent like a space alien sometimes. They're just so different from the parent.
Every time.
Yes. Oh, is that right? Okay. See, I just, it was just something that, in this case, it was a rather dramatic one because she had this very kind of blue collar, rough and ready kind of dad with a sissy boy. So,
how old are you in this story?
In the story, I'm about 9.
Okay, take it away.
Today, I got a surprise. I was in bed reading Encyclopedia Brown Saves the Day in my bunk. I heard the station wagon park in the spot right next to where my window is, like always. My pa was home from the flea market. Every Sunday, he goes there. I heard pa open the front door, call my name, and stomp across the kitchen right into the little bedroom where me and Sylvie's bunk beds are. And he put a big box down on the floor right next to my bed. It was wrapped up in a rope tied in a messed up bow on the top. My name, my real name, not Gordo, was written on it in big, ugly letters. "What's that?" I ask. "A present," says Pa. It wasn't my birthday. It wasn't Christmas. So I was surprised to get a present. "For me? Really, Pa?" "Correcto. It's yours, Gordo." "Why?" "Just because," says Pa. Oh my God, a just because present. Pa starts laughing, takes out his pocket knife, and pulls out the blade. I cut the rope off the box and open the top. It's a present that has extra presents inside. I see bags, boxes, stuff wrapped in plastic. I pull out the first thing. It's a black leather thing shaped like a flat pear. "All right. You like it?" "I think so, Pa. But what is it?" "It's a speed bag. It's like a punching bag. We just gotta put some air in it, hang it up, And then you can start punching with these. And he rips open a blue paper bag and he pulls out two puffy red gloves that make me think of clown shoes, and I laugh at them. What's so funny? Nothing, I just think they look kind of funny. They're not funny, they're boxing gloves. You use them to hit the punching bag and maybe hit somebody in the ring one day, huh? What do you think? Oh, so far, this is a bad present. Where'd you get all this boxing stuff?
At the Pulga, of course. All kinds of new things this week. Boxing and lucha libre wrestling things for boys. People were buying it like pan caliente. Look in the box, hijo, there's more.
Ooh, shiny white boxer boots with silver stripes and shoelaces and little dangly things on the side. I look up at my pa. Thank you, pa. These are so pretty. Dad just looks at me. He opens his mouth like he's gonna say something, but he don't say nothing. And then he breathes real heavy, like he's tired, and says, keep going, hijo. I reach into the box. Yes! A lucha libre mask of my favorite wrestler, El Santo. I look up at my pa. My mouth is open like some pendejo because I can't believe it. He smiles at me and he says, it's all for you, hijo. Keep going. There's a bag in the box and I open it up. A jump rope. Wow, pa, a jump rope, I say. This is the best thing. I feel like maybe I'm gonna cry. I look up at my dad and I almost can't say it, but finally I say, pa, I've been wanting my own jump rope forever and Sylvie never wants to loan me hers, but now, anytime I want to, I can play jump rope. It's not just for playing. It's for exercise, hijo, so your heart and your legs can get stronger and you can burn off the fat. Get really strong to box or to wrestle. You know how Muhammad Ali is the black Superman? Yeah, he's the best. Well, Gordo, you can be the brown Superman. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Un boxeador or a wrestler bien fantástico. You just have to train hard. Do you want to put on the mask? Yes, pa. I grab it and try to put it on, but I can't. Pa takes the mask and unties the laces, opens it up and puts it on my head and pulls it down hard. I can feel him tying the laces in the back. When he finishes, it's really tight and it's pulling my hair and my ears kind of bent and it hurts, but I don't care. I love this. Turn around, Gordo, says Pa. Look at yourself in the mirror. I walk over to the mirror. I look cool. I look very cool. My pa stands behind me. I hold my arms up and make a muscle, and he reaches down to try to pull off my shirt. I don't want to take off my shirt in front of him, and I grab it and try to pull it back down. Gordo, take it off. I don't want now. I take it off, and I feel kind of naked or something, and I don't like it. He tells me to look in the mirror again. I look. Wow, I look even more like El Santo now. He's smiling. I feel like El Santo. It's okay. Let's go outside so I can teach you jumping the rope. I already know how, Pa, I say. When I play jump rope with Sylvia and the girls, I can beat them sometimes. I grab my jump rope and follow him. My pa looks pretty excited when he sees me jump. Caramba, Gordo! You got good reflexes, mijo. Good feet. I never seen him so happy before, and I start to jump faster and faster, and when the rope hits the ground, little rocks and dust come up. My papi's watching me, and I start to sing my favorite jump rope song. I'm a little princess dressed in blue. Here are the things I like to do. Salute to the captain, bow to the queen, turn my back on the submarine. Don't, he says. Don't what, I ask. Don't sing that song. I stand there, and I'm breathing hard from jumping, but I'm also thinking hard. His face is red. If the next thing I say is the wrong thing, I'm gonna get hit. Should I sing a different song, I ask? No, no singing. Just jump the rope and counting. Just count, okay? Okay, I say, I'll count. I jump faster and keep on counting. Every time I miss, I start again and try harder and harder. My face feels hot in the Santo mask, and I want to take it off, but I start jumping some more. My legs feel like they're burning, and I'm in a cloud of dust. But Ba looks happier, and I think he's not going to hit me, and he's not going to shout, and everything is not bad. Caramba, hijo, that's good how you do it. You're big, but you're fast, hijo. You can be a great boxer. You want to box, right? I don't know. Maybe. Just try. You can do it. Okay, I'll try. I gotta take a shower now, hijo. You keep training, okay? Yes. I start jumping rope and counting. It's not as fun as singing, but it's okay. After a while, I start singing instead. Then I hear somebody behind me say, "You think you're the best, but you're not, gordo." I turn around. It's Miguelito from across the camp. Whoa, he has a new Santo mask too, and knee pads, and a blue cape. He's not wearing no shirt, and you can see all his bones in his chest. But the cape is pretty, and he looks good, standing there with his bony legs all open like a superhero. I didn't say I was the best, Miguelito. But you're wearing the Santo mask, ese. And Santo's the best, so you think you're the best. You know that old mattress someone threw out behind the tractor barn? Yeah, the one we jump on? Yeah, that one. You and me, we can have a championship fight on that mattress. I challenge you. You are El Gordo. I'm not El Gordo. I'm El Santo. Can't you see my mask? If you win the world championship fight, then you are El Santo. But if you lose, you are El Gordo forever. And I'm gonna rip off your mask and everyone can see who you are forever. The big, fat, greasy Gordo. I'm not afraid of you, Miguelito. You ain't no big deal, man. Just because you're always lying on your butt reading your books, nobody thinks you're a big deal because you're reading books. We walk out together to the mattress leaning on the back wall of the tractor barn. We drag it to a place where the ground is flat. The mattress is nice and big, so we have room to move around. He begins making animal noises at me. He comes running and he pushes his head into my stomach. I go, oof, and I fall back on the mattress. He jumps on me. He grabs me by the neck and starts strangling me. Damn, Miguelito is fast. I roll and he rolls with me and I'm on top. I grab him by the hands and start pushing them down until I have him crucified on the mattress. And suddenly he's on top of me and trying to crucify me. I roll myself over and try to get his arms off me, but I can't. Then I just fall backwards and I land on top of him and he rips a big old fart. Everything stops. Miguelito gets up and says, "Hey, you know how to do the airplane?" "Yeah, I know," I say. "Let's do the airplane then." I grab him by one arm and one leg and I lift him off the ground and begin to spin in circles. He's shouting. I keep spinning him faster and faster, and he's laughing and screaming, and I feel strong, like a big, giant superhero. Boss, man! Then it gets too fast, and I lose my grip, and Miguelito goes flying past the mattress, and he skids into the dirt. Oh, he lands on his face and his chest, and he goes, ugh.
I run to Miguelito. His mask's all crooked, but I can see part of his mouth. It's wide open. His brand new mask has blood around the mouth and the nose, and he has a big raspberry on his chest. He's crying. Miguelito fixes his mask. He looks at me and says, "Why'd you drop me, ese?" "I'm sorry, man. It's an accident. I couldn't hold on. I'm sorry." Miguelito thinks for a moment, and we're both quiet, and then someone shouts at us, "Hey! What the hell happened?" It's my pa. He's walking to us. His hair is still wet from the shower. He looks pretty mad. He looks down at Miguelito. "Get up, Miguelito." Then pa looks at me. What's he gonna say? "Gordo." "Yes, pa?" "You won."
"I won?"
"Yes, hijo. You won your first fight." He puts one hand on my shoulder and squeezes. He smiles at me. Then he walks away. Miguelito walks away behind pa. His head is down. The shiny blue cape has a rip. Miguelito turns around, looks at me, flips me off. I can't look at him, and instead, I look down at my pretty silver boots. I reach back and begin to open up the laces on my mask. My hair's wet. The air feels good. But I don't feel good. I look at my beautiful silver mask. "I won," I say. "I won."
Thank you, Jaime, for sharing that story with us. Jaime Cortez is a writer and visual artist based in Northern California. His upcoming book of humorous, semi-autobiographical short stories will be released soon. You can find out more about Jaime on our website, snapjudgment.org. The original score for that story was by Clay Xavier. It was produced by Anna Sussman. It happened again, Snappers. It happened again. And if you missed even a moment of today's Snap, don't wander off. Don't be ashamed. There's no need for all that. Just subscribe to the Snap Judgment Podcast. Let everyone know. And if you love Snap storytelling, if your world has ever been changed by putting on someone else's skin, support the show that made it possible. And if you have a story that you need to share with our Snap family, we would love to hear it. Email us. Pitches@snapjudgment.org. Pitches@snapjudgment.org. Snap is brought to you by the team that has absolutely nothing to hide. What you see is what you get. Except, of course, for the Uber producer, Mr. Mark Ristich. There are skeletons in that man's closet. Anna Sussman, Renzo Gorio. There's Pat Machine Miller, John Facile, Shayna Sheely, Marissa Dodge, Nika Singh, Eliza Smith, Lauren Newsom, Tail to Cop, Flo Wiley, Nancy Lopez, Regina Bariaco, and Leon Morimoto. And this is not the news. No way is this the news. You might have heard. In fact, you can make a radio show in your shed that no one will ever hear, advertising products that were never made, like chocolate-covered mittens that you can eat right off your fingers. And then one day, you see a guy wearing chocolate-covered mittens. He was eating right off his fingers, and he sees you and turns away all guilty. And you would still not be as far away from the news as this is. But this is WNYC.